The question to be evaluated today is, what is the role of steroids in preventing post-extubation stridor and reducing the risk of re-intubation? The first study we're going to look at is from CHEST. The principal author is Maureen Mead, and the title of the paper is Trials of Corticosteroids to Prevent Post-Extubation Airway Complications. It's from CHEST 2001, Volume 120, pages 464 to 468 in supplement. Laryngeal edema and the resultant stridor are common problems in children following tracheal extubation after mechanical ventilation. Not infrequently, airway compromise necessitates endotracheal re-intubation. This sequence of events also occurs in adults, although far less often. Pre-extubation corticosteroid administration might, in theory, ameliorate this problem. The anti-inflammatory effects of corticosteroids could prevent or attenuate the degree of laryngeal edema. In cases that might otherwise be mild, corticosteroids might even eliminate significant edema. However, it is plausible that corticosteroid therapy might have insufficient time to act to prevent laryngeal edema, or might, for a variety of other reasons, have a minimal therapeutic impact. Randomized control trials represent the only way to definitely resolve this issue, focusing on outcomes of importance to patients. In this trial, the authors review the trials of that investigators have conducted in both pediatric and adult patients. The authors present their methodology as well as their statistical results, and those will be included in the paper presented on the website. But going to the discussion, two well-designed trials of dexamethasone therapy prior to extubation in children have unequivocally demonstrated that steroids reduce post-extubation stridor. The inferences from these trials are strengthened because patients, caregivers, and those assessing outcome were all blind allocation. In contrast to the effects on stridor, the effect on re-intubation is far from clear. In one of the two studies, 7 of 32 patients not receiving steroids required re-intubation in contrast to 0 of 31 patients receiving steroids. The trend in the other study was in the opposite direction, was 4 of 77 not receiving steroids and 9 of 76 children receiving steroids required re-intubation. We found no adequate explanation for this difference. The three trials of steroid therapy in adults observed so few events that even the results of the pooled analysis have such wide 95% confidence intervals that they are essentially uninformative. The results are consistent with a reduction in the risk ratio of re-intubation of 86% and also with an increase in the risk ratio of re-intubation of 58%. For clinicians who believe that preventing stridor in children after extubation is in itself important, the results of the two randomized control trials provide a definitive answer. Steroids reduce the relative risk of stridor by about 40%. Even using the more conservative estimate of 21% stridor frequency in patients not receiving steroids, the results suggest that one needs to treat no more than 12 children with dexamethasone therapy to prevent one from developing stridor. For those who believe that dexamethasone therapy is warranted only if it prevents re-intubation, the question remains unanswered. Both trials found re-intubation rates of greater than 10%, although hundreds of children would ultimately have been enrolled in randomized control trials to answer the question. It may well be worth investing in the resources to resolve this question. Now, in adults, the situation is different. Re-intubation for upper airway obstruction is very infrequent. Tens of thousands of patients would have to be randomized to detect the absolute differences in effect that could be expected even if steroids substantially reduce the risk ratio of laryngeal edema. Such a trial is almost certainly not worth the resources required. Focusing on a high-risk population such as patients who had had airway trauma or those undergoing facial reconstruction may be more fruitful and feasible. The data included in the systematic review and more comprehensive discussion of the original articles are included in an evidence-based report of the Agency of Healthcare Research and Quality. The next article is entitled Corticosteroid Use in the Intensive Care Unit at What Cost? It's from Rebecca Britt, and it appears in Archives of Surgery. The full reference as well as the PDF file will also be located on the website. www.burndoc.com or burndoc.net as well. This is a overall evaluation of the use of corticosteroids in the intensive care setting. period. Only a small section of this is actually dedicated to the use of airway edema. In this study, the authors write that steroids are commonly given for airway edema and stridor, although this use is not supported by prospective trials. Markovitz and Randolph reviewed 3 studies in adults with a total of 1,047 patients and found no differences in the rate of re-intubation or post-extubation stridor. A meta-analysis of 4 trials of corticosteroid therapy in adult patients looked at the rates of stridor and re-intubation and found so few events that the results were uninformative. There is clearly a need for a large multi-center prospective trial to study the benefits of corticosteroids in adults with airway edema and stridor before the use is accepted. Overall, this is a good article that looks at some of the problems of injudicious use of steroids in the intensive care unit setting. In the same volume of Archives of Surgery, Mike Rotundo has an interesting commentary on this article. Dr. Rotundo writes, "Machiavelli once said, anyone wishing to see what is to be must consider what has been. For nearly 40 years, enthusiasm for steroid use in the intensive care unit has been like a pendulum, cyclically swinging towards and then away from their use. Currently, enthusiasm for steroid use appears to be on an upswing. Despite decades of conflicting data, steroids are once again being advocated for the treatment of sepsis. In addition, with a greater appreciation for the prevalence of relative adrenal insufficiency in the ICU, the use of steroids appears to be increasing. A historical review of the subject would lead one to proceed down this path with caution. Britt and associates at Eastern Virginia Medical School have clearly articulated the results of a well-designed case-control study examining the complications associated with steroid use in the ICU. Their findings of significantly increased rates of pneumonia, bloodstream infections, urinary tract infections, ventilator days, and ICU length of stay serve as a warning to those who advocate increased steroid use. It is also noteworthy that these results may have been even more significant had their institution not already implemented a series of protocols designed to limit infections. If one considers the indications for the use of steroids in the ICU, the benefits may not outweigh the risks. Use of steroids to treat traumatic optic neuritis is not well supported in the literature. Likewise, steroids may not alter re-intubation rates in those with airway edema. The literature does not provide guidance for steroid use in, quote, relative, quote, adrenal insufficiency. Steroid use in sepsis remains controversial, and in the treatment of spinal cord injury, steroids have recently been de-emphasized. Given the paucity of documented benefit, the infectious risk of steroids needs to be carefully considered before initiation of therapy. So, in summary, when it comes to considering the use of Decadron to prevent stridor post-extubation and maybe hoping that it may decrease the rate of re-intubation in adults, will we provide the patient with steroids? My answer is no. This is Jeff Geith.